The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
That gets to the frustration of Cubs fans of like, look at this division and like, why is the approach so measured and logical all the time to its extreme of like, when it feels like, I mean, Milwaukee trades away Corbin Burnes, like, and they let their manager, this like franchise local icon, walk, and like they're still leading the division. Like, that just drives Cubs fans crazy with a good reason.
It's where Cubs fans agree. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design in St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined today by senior writer at The Athletic, covering the Cubs, Patrick Mooney. We are outside Busch Stadium awaiting the grand debut of the Cardinals City Connect, and also, like, Cubs Cards 2024. It's crazy. It's, like, late May, and they're playing for the first time.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the Cardinals. I obviously read your coverage, and it's really hard for me to write off the Cardinals as someone who started covering the Cubs in 2010. Has had so many like getaway days ruined by like Cardinals comebacks and stuff like that. So we won't get the Shota show. It's not Shota Day, but otherwise it should be a good measuring stick after the Cubs started the season playing almost exclusively outside the division.
So did they? Yeah, they did. The Reds did, and the Cardinals. The Cardinals have only faced the Brewers. You mentioned Shota Imanaga. I'm really interested in the fact that he was set to start the Friday night game here at Busch Stadium. It would have been his 10th start. He has the lowest ERA in 110 years, maybe the lowest ERA ever.
Ever.
Through nine.
First nine.
Is it ever?
Yes.
Okay. Ever. For
since ERA became a stat.
Since ERA. Okay. Yeah. Since the invention of ERA, yes. He has the lowest ERA at 0.84, correct?
That sounds right.
Yeah, all right. Of anyone in their first nine starts in the majors. But he won't pitch in this series, and they didn't even reschedule him, you know, for all the baseball fans out there to have a Shota Sonny showdown on national TV, weather permitting, Sunday night for ESPN. So I want to start there. Why no Shota?
That's a great question that we have not gotten a comprehensive answer to. Yeah, we're taping on a Saturday afternoon. This is announced late Friday night. We're waiting to get into the ballpark. The initial framing of this was the Cubs are using this as a chance to give Shota extra rest. While that does set off alarm bells, that has been Craig's counsel's strategy. While he was managing the Brewers, it was something he outlined in spring training. This is not a Shota plan or a Shota policy. It is just, he thinks you get the best out of pitchers if you consistently give them extra rest. I'd imagine there's some deference to Jameson Taillon, who's pitched extremely well, and as well as Javier Assad, who's pitched even better. I think you kind of give some consideration to that, too. The one thing, just to mess with counsel, we'll ask him, like, you know, do you want Shota, you know, for your return to the Brewers? I think that's kind of interesting of, like,
yeah,
you know, kind of trolling Milwaukee that way. I doubt he'll bite on that question, but certainly that's going to be like the first thing, you know, we ask him today.
It's really interesting because they do have this series in St. Louis before it's Craig's return to Milwaukee for the first time as a manager. They faced each other a lot in spring training, but it'll be the first time in that city at that ballpark in Cubs colors. Any possibility? It also has to do with the Cardinals were the last team to actually kind of hit Shota. I mean, that happened in spring training.
That is interesting. I think that cannot be discounted entirely. And just, you know, covering Craig Counsell, it's been learning a lot of, like, he is very much day-to-day in the moment while also thinking along with the front office. So he has these long-range goals in mind. He's a big proponent of rest and recovery. But, you know, I was personally looking forward to seeing Shota here in this environment. He's been just a great story for us to, to follow.
Yeah.
Just something new, something different, and someone who just has a great personality. He's a showman on the mound. And, you know, I think part of the questions today will be like, you know, this isn't going to last forever. Like, how much trepidation do the Cubs have about a guy who wasn't, like, he was consistently productive in Japan, but, like, he's not someone that you ticketed to, like, throw 250 innings this year. Like,
right,
he's
physically
not that imposing. He's about 5'11", whatever, 190 pounds. Like, will some of that carry on his fastball get zapped a little bit as it we get deeper in the season? It gets hotter. He's a fly ball pitcher. Like, how is that going to adjust? And I do think
Wrigley gets warmer. What's that going to be like?
Exactly. And that's something that everyone was well aware of and skeptical about going into this.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought that there'd be, like, kind of a harder adjustment on the front end. And then you get into the groove. And I don't think everyone was sandbagging us. You couldn't have expected this. But he is the difference between, like, the Cubs, you know, feeling, like, pretty good, all things considered, and the Cubs being in a position of, like, what is going on here?
Well, okay, so what kind of pitcher are we missing? You touched on the carry on the fastball. I mean, he seems, from watching him on TV, I saw him the one day in person there in Arizona, but he's a guy who dots the fastball, is okay playing up in the zone with it because there's some deception, and then just riddles hitter with a split finger that can be in the zone and out of the zone and is a chase pitch. So what show are we not going to see this weekend? What kind of pitcher are we not going to see? And could he be part of what makes a difference in the division race?
For sure. I think the Cubs are 8-1 in his starts. And in that loss, he may have thrown five scoreless innings. It's something absurd like that. And I mean, they've won 2 1-0 games that he pitched already. And we're at Memorial Day weekend. And so, you know, I did not cover Fernando Valenzuela, but I did cover Jake Arrieta. And that year he had in 2015, like, for teams to take those huge steps, you need, like, individual players to have, like, monster seasons, that consolidation of war. Like, who's going to have that 5-6 win season? And, like, that has been a question mark about this Cubs rebuild of, like, okay, like, you have, in theory, like, good depth, a supply of prospects coming up. They do deals for the most part on their terms, meaning, like, not the 10-12 year deals that those shortstops were getting. It's Dansby Swanson for 7 and 177. It's going after a hitter like Seiya Suzuki, and giving him, you know, basically it's $100 million guaranteed, but that's, like, a space that they feel more comfortable in. And that, but you do wonder, like, who's going to carry the team? Cody Bellinger did for a little bit for a while last summer, but just not all the way until the end. And, like, who's gonna make the plays that, you know, get you into the playoffs and swing a postseason series? Like, Justin Steele did that for a long time last season as well. I mean, that was a big part of it. And so what Shota's doing really, to me, has changed the entire perception of the season so far.
One of the things Craig Counsell said to the group of us when I was out there in Arizona was this notion of, like, you know, you talk about, like, what could change a season in spring. You don't know because it's a surprise. And, like, he mentioned, boy, I can't remember who he mentioned, but I brought up Willy Adames, because if you had talked about Willy Adames in the spring with the Brewers, they would have looked at you like, oh, you're talking about the Rays shortstop. But then they made the trade early on, radically changed their season, you know, arguably won the division for them with that early move. You know, one of the surprises, I think, already is, just to be frank, the Brewers, like, in this division.
Yep.
I mean, the Brewers traded their ace. They lost their other ace. They don't have Devin Williams, their closer, and they don't have their manager. And yet they still have been in first place with, like, the best rocking offense in the division. So do they really miss the $40 million man? Or was, I mean, did Milwaukee have momentum that is beyond the manager? Like, I think that's a surprise.
I mean, are you saying that Council is a good manager just because he got to manage against the Cubs for so many times? Or I do think there's something to, like, you know, not to turn it around on the Cardinals, but, like,
sure, do
the
it.
Like, the Cardinals were good because, in part, because they got to play, like, the Reds and Pirates. Like that unbalanced schedule
they got fat.
Was big, like for a lot of this stuff. And I think that was part of what, you know, that certainly helped Craig Counsell's bottom line, right? Like I'm not taking anything away from he's clearly one of the best managers in the game. It was a move that, while shocking, in hindsight made total sense. Really just a very impressive person, like someone who can talk to a player, can talk to an owner, can talk to a president of baseball operations, can talk to any beat writer and, you know, feel comfortable and communicate clearly. Like, that's hard to do. Yeah. Like, no doubt. But, you know, for me, I have a hard time writing off the Brewers. It clearly wasn't just Counsell. It wasn't just David Stearns. Like, they have some things figured out. They do certain things well. And, you know, I'm not writing off the Cardinals yet either. Like, I don't think there's some huge threat to, like, win the World Series. But, like I said, from watching the Cardinals from afar, it's just hard to totally write them off.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
What has Counsell brought to the Cubs? They obviously, their biggest, I think you can argue, would you say he was their second biggest free agent of the winter was Counsell?
I'd say he was their biggest.
Okay, their biggest.
I think just in terms of the kind of capital or kind of credibility, like the symbolism of that move, I think was like, this is an organization that can still do big, surprising things, and that will do things that is not just kind of like a cookie cutter rebuild of, you know, oh, we were good and now contracts are up, so we're just going to kind of like tear it down for a few, write a couple seasons off. Like, this is definitely a signal of like, okay, it's playoffs or bust this year. And, you know, the roster that was handed needs someone like him. Like, there's a lot of interchangeable parts. There isn't, outside of Shota and moments of other players, there isn't like a ton of star power. So like, he immediately lowers the panic level when in the fifth inning on opening day, Justin Steele goes down with a hamstring injury. Mm. Kyle Hendricks has the worst stretch of his entire professional career by far right out of the gate. Craig Counsell kind of lowers the temperature and pieces things together. And the Cubs have, who knows if they'll stay healthy, how good they'll be, but they have lots of like pitching pieces, like a Ben Brown, Hayden Wesneski, Cade Horton now that Paul Skenes is in the show, might be first, second, third best pitching prospect in the game. Whatever you're, you know. And so
The Cubs might have like one of the best rookies in the National League in pitching, right?
For sure, yeah. And I mean, and Michael,
well, two of them, yeah.
Michael Bush has tailed off, but he's had a really good.
Good point, yeah.
He had a good,
great first weekend playing at Bush for Bush.
Exactly, yeah. And so, like, they have this young talent that they want someone to help nurture. They have these interchangeable pieces that need to be put in alignment in the right spots. And, you know, I think probably similar to St. Louis, there are certain markets where, like, and I remember, I think it was Alex Speer's book about the Red Sox homegrown, of like, there are certain places where you take your projections and there's something about the market that kind of amplifies everything, that like the swings are kind of bigger, the waves are harder, like the momentum just moves faster in either direction. And I think he's perfectly positioned to kind of help the Cubs weather all the stuff that comes from managing an iconic team.
It is interesting, like, the lineage of managers that, like, the headline managers that y'all have had there to cover is, you know, Madden and Ross and Counsell. All big I don't know if big personality is the right word, but certainly like big presences, you know, like they're notable. I mean, they're celebrities. They're celebrity managers in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, David Ross was literally on Dancing with the Stars and literally wrote a New York Times bestseller about being a teammate and like leadership. So, Council.
Joe Madden did too, right? Didn't he wrote a Joe Madden, New York Times?
I mean, Joe Madden, without a doubt, obviously, like the kind of quintessential celebrity manager. Craig Council strikes me as someone who certainly thinks he's really good and you know, enjoys the competition, but doesn't seem to have like much tolerance for nonsense. And while he's very interesting to cover and very insightful, and behind the scenes, I'm told, has a great sense of humor. That, you know,
he's wicked sarcastic.
Yeah, that like that does not always come across on some of like the televised press conferences, but certainly like has a great presence and can like command a room and tell great stories and kind of help players make sense of the season and also explain to fans and media like what's going on.
Interesting. And you, I mean, it's a few months in, but certainly spring training, you get a real good sense of what a new manager. That's one thing about like spring training is you see right then and there either how organized, how approachable they're communicate. I mean, it's really quick that you probably get a good feel for how ready a manager is or how receptive a team is to that manager.
Well, I thought of you as that was unfolding in Arizona because I remember there was a time there when like every morning under Madden, the Cubs would be having some form of shenanigans that we'd all tweet out. And I feel like you'd text me and our friends like Paul Sullivan and Gordon Whitmire or whoever of just like, oh, it's the strength coach in green body paint and a Speedo on St. Patrick's Day leading the stretch. Or like, oh, Cubs have a dunk tank, like stuff like that. And I'm not complaining, but I do think that it was a boring camp. Like, it was camp boring. And that's part of... Honestly, I think the team's, like, DNA or temperament, like, players like Nico Horner and Dansby Swanson and Ian Happ are, like, serious players who are committed to their craft. Like, they're intelligent, they're thoughtful, they can be funny, like, they're not walking around with scowls or anything, but, like... They're kind of like baseball rats, and that's definitely what Council is.
That's what we were wondering about, whether or not the Cardinals could ever have, like, a summer sausage. They tried a hamburger phone for a little bit, you know, but it would be like, no, they really, like, it would go for a while, and there'd be a few players that would play along with it, but then it would come turn for, like, Paul Goldschmidt to run through the dugout with a summer sausage, or they'd hand him, I don't know, wings or something. I don't know what they would, you know, like a Chuck Berry guitar for him to do the duck walk, and it would be over. It would just end. You know, it just wouldn't happen because of that. Like, just there for business, and baseball is the business, and there's probably a play to be had at first base or a play to be had at third base for Nolan Arenado that they just shift gears, and they're it's not really a culture that has that summer sausage style to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, kind of a... Do you have the right manager for the moment? And Joe Madden certainly was, with all that pressure and all this young talent, of walking in and be like, you know what, I'm going to sit in the Wrigley interview room for like 20 minutes every single day and answer every single dumb question. I'll tell you stories, old stories about the Angels, and I'll throw in some references to The Office, and maybe it'll be some, like, you know, mild sexual innuendo or like pop culture references of just like, you know, to keep everyone entertained. It's like, oh, you know, are the Cubs winning or losing now? You know, like, just like your head's kind of on a spin. Like, oh, and what sort of like dress up trip are we going to do for this upcoming road trip? And, you know, that worked then. And, you know, Craig Council right now works for the Cubs. And that's the alignment of like, he can more than think along with the front office. Like, he worked in a front office. Mm-hmm. He understands every single aspect of the baseball operations department and takes it a lot of stuff off of Jed Hoyer's plate, which I'm sure he very much appreciates. And then, yeah, a lot of these players watch the Brewers and take it to the Cubs over the years. Like, it's not that hard to, like, be like, okay, like, every time the Cubs, you know, in the clubhouse, their mind's like, man, every time we would go up to Milwaukee, like, that was a hard-fought game, or, like, crazy stuff would happen, or, like, you know, each game would come down to these like one or two like matchups or coin flip decisions, and like the Brewers always seem to be really well prepared and always in the right position. And you've seen it.
I feel
like we talked about this years ago of like running through the division at like a GM meetings or something. It's like, well, the Brewers have the best manager in the division, if not the game.
I thought that for a while. I get a hard time here from folks around the Cardinals for having said that he just was the best manager in the in the National League, and the Cardinals have gone through a couple managers since I said that, but the way he handled the bullpen and the way he had this was like one of the things I really was impressed by was the way he had buy-in from guys who could be closers, but he was ahead of the curve, not in seeing the need to have somebody in the seventh close out a game, best reliever, best time, best part of the lineup up, but he was ahead of the game in getting the guy to buy into that and knowing that there would be money in holds, money in middle, in setup relief, and success in all-star appearances. Pat Neshek was that guy for the Cardinals, and he got into the all-star game. But that was really kind of still early on in that. But Hader was a force, and he didn't need a save for you to know he was a force. He didn't need a save to know he was going to get paid, you know, and I think that helped. Devin Williams was an absolute force in a setup role, and he was going to get paid and win awards and stuff like that, and didn't need a save to do it. And I think Craig's messaging there, and maybe being a former player helped, but certainly having success doing that and selling them on that success was huge. And I think that put him ahead. Not the fact that he was willing to do it, but that he had buy-in from his team and the kind of ripple effects that had everywhere for things he could do. And the team would be like, oh, well, we get it. He's going to make that move because he sees this as the time to win. And our manager is going to do everything it takes to win in that moment.
And to his credit, and I think this is where you can understand why players appreciate him, is that he comes in being like, you know, I really only had to manage like 8 innings. Like when you have Devin Williams and Josh Hader, like you just work backwards from there. Like,
right.
And so I think that goes a long way of like not walking in like I'm a genius, I have all the answers. And something that I didn't fully appreciate until a player told me, because he read something that was on The Athletic, was like Council really understands the grind of a long season. And so we've seen what's happened to relievers. Like, great, you get your holds, but like these guys are interchangeable. Teams can just burn through these optional relievers, you know, throw as hard as you can until your arm breaks down. And that he, I'm told, has a lot of consideration for that of like, you're down, you're down. This is our plan. We're going to take our starter as long as it can. And then these are kind of the offshoots of that. But this is what I see for you. This is what I think you can do. I'm going to put you in a position to succeed. And so stuff like that, I think, gives him, you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, I don't know what it was like in, what was it, 2015 when he took over the Brewers. But, like, certainly coming in now, like, everyone knows what this guy does. He has just absolute security. I mean, he's probably the most secure guy in the organization who isn't on, like, the board of directors. Like, so this is his show. Like, and I think Jed Hoyer, to his credit, has often deferred to managers. You know, I think that, and Theo Epstein before him, I think that was kind of their joke of, like, you know, people think we're interfering. Like, sure, we'd love to, like, write out the lineup. Any front office, right? We'd love to write
some
the lineup. We'd love to write out every lineup and tell them what to do. But no, like, this is their space.
Yeah.
This is their domain, and Council owns it.
It's, you want to, I got a quick inside, like, baseball story that Cardinal fans have watched happen. I'm sure some have picked up on. Is you're talking about, like, the grind of the season and the respect for the relievers. One thing that's happened here a couple times, maybe a handful of times, but it did here recently with Nate Robertson, where, you know, Nate Robertson, you know, he's not in a high leverage spot. He's not a reliever that they're going to call on to go close a game unless, you know, everybody else has been used. He hasn't worked his way into that spot. He was acquired this past off season. He's been up and down, but he goes out there and throws multiple innings and just grinds and then fatigues and gives up runs. And it is the quintessential you're absorbing innings today to be gone tomorrow outing. You have options. We need a fresh arm. You know, it's every bit of that.
Yeah.
And the next day, he's not gone. And this happened last year, too, where a guy went out there, had to shoulder innings, pitched fine, you know, fatigued, pitched okay. Cardinals didn't win, but it's like they're going to get a fresh arm the next day, and they didn't. And Oliver Marmol has said, you know, he told the reliever last year during the game, I'm sticking with you, because he realized that, like, just that subtle thing where if guys go out there and they pitch that they're knowing every out they get gets them closer to Memphis, that's not the mentality he wants them to have. He wants them to pitch every out like they're closer to staying here. And if they pitch well, you have to reward them by staying here. I think that's really kind of respectful of the grind. And also, like, saying we're not going to shuttle you back and forth. You aren't going to be rewarded with a ticket to Memphis because you helped us get through a loss.
Yeah, you have to know how to lose, right? And, like, handle losing, which is something that, you know, I'm told Council does bring to the table of, like, okay, if we have this three-game series, like, how are we going to win it? And sometimes that does mean, you know, punting.
Yeah. How are we not going to lose the next one because we tried to win this one?
My colleague Sadiv Sharma likes to quote former Cardinal John Lackey of, like, rolling his eyes at us being like, you all think this is 162 seasons, and, like, sometimes you do have to, like, keep the bigger picture in mind. And, like, when you have the largest contract for a manager in baseball history, when you have a long track record of success in these exact areas, and when you have, for the Cubs, of, you know, a very large supply of young pitching talent, maybe not compared to what the Cardinals used to have, but certainly what the Cubs had, even when they were rolling, like, there are a lot of interesting arms here, and that they feel like he is the right guy to draw all that out, keep the group relatively healthy, and also just kind of, like, keep the confidence up.
I want to ask you about those arms. If the first turnaround that led to the 2016 World Series is the Theo rebuild, you're now a few years into the Jed rebuild. Is that a good way to describe it?
Well, it's definitely, this is Jed's team, right?
Yeah, this, like, Jed,
like,
rebuild.
Yeah. Like, this is, like, all of his decisions, right or wrong, good or bad, are, like, built into this, which is part of why Theo walked away and, you know, Cubs ownership group is not perfect, but they let their baseball people run things. So, like, it's not like, you know, Jed wants to sign someone and Tom Ricketts is, like, calling up Scott Boras. Like, it's the exact opposite. They have no relationship at all.
Wow.
And so, except when, like, they volley through the media and, like, you know, Tom Ricketts says something and then we reach out to Scott and then, like, get dueling quotes. But essentially this is
beat writer tennis.
Exactly, yeah. So this is Jed's team, and I think what you're getting at of, like, it isn't quite as hitter heavy. There is a lot more pitching, and I think the game has just, like, changed so much since then. Jed and I were actually talking about this the other day of, like, you know, it just feels like Theo was all about impact and what, like, you know, stuff and, like, explosive power and just, like, you know, if you didn't have that, like, whatever, you're just kind of filler. Whereas Jed just seems obsessed with depth. And I think what it is, more than, like, a difference between these two people who are, like, roughly the same age, grew up in the same part of the country, worked together for years, like, they see things pretty similarly. It's more of just how much the game has changed. Like, in 2016, I think the Cubs had five starters each make at least 30 starts.
Mm-hmm.
And they were regularly going 6-7 innings. Like, that simply does not happen anymore. So, like, the idea is
Cardinals are trying to make it happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I get
not
why they
going great, but it's going okay.
I certainly get why they did it. And, like, that's going back to Imanaga. Like, the Cubs thought, like, he'd be, like, a solid major league starter. Like, maybe it's, who knows if it's, like, a 4 or a 3, or, you know, maybe it's, like, you know, moments of being a two, like, you just don't know. They certainly didn't see a one, but, like, you can never have enough pitching, and I think, like, Jed and Council have a similar level of, like, paranoia in terms of roster management, that it's a good fit that way.
One of the things, I talked to Jed on the field in 2016 during the World Series, and one of the things he told me was that the test of the Cubs rebuild was not going to be whether it won a World Series, whether it got to a World Series, but how it could remain in perpetual contention. And he said the thing that the team then didn't have that every team needs to be annually in contention, he brought up the Cardinals as an example, is a pipeline of pitching. He said, you will, if you expect to spend on pitching, I'm paraphrasing here, but his point was, if you expect to go out to fill your pitching needs with free agents, you will have spent so much money and you can't, you don't have it to put elsewhere, either to keep your hitters or go out and get the free agent hitters. He goes, you're chasing your tail at that point because you cannot, you have to produce pitching. And he said that that was the next step for the Cubs out of 2016. It really didn't happen then. They didn't really produce pitching. And that, to me, I wonder, like, your view of it, is that a subplot to then why they did go dip and have to go do a rebuild? Because they didn't have that pitching. And is that different now? Is that, like, really what makes this rebuild feel a little different? Is that one, you could see the strength on the surface, but beneath it was, like, kind of starting to erode a little bit, and eventually the pothole came. Maybe this one is a little bit more firmer ground. Maybe this highway is a little stronger.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, I do think that, I mean, Jed's absolutely right about the pitching part. The problem was, like, and we're not talking about, oh, the Cubs didn't develop, like, whatever, a Michael Wacha or Lance Lynn. Like, we're talking about, like zero pitchers contributing at the major league level over X number of years.
I mean, it was zero.
I want to say, if I'm pretty sure a homegrown pitcher did not throw a single postseason pitch in 2016.
And there was only one on the roster. I was the Mizzou kid.
Rob Z. And I want to say he might be the only homegrown pitcher who made a postseason roster between 2015 and 2020. That was five years, and it was probably 8, 9, 10 playoff rounds. Like, and there may have been one guy who snuck on a roster that I have looked this up in the past, but that's a rough ballpark of, like, just nothing. And now there are a lot of reasons for that, and they did use pitching prospects to get pitchers. Like, I mean, Cole Hamels was amazing. Jose Quintana was pretty good. Dylan Cease wound up being way better, you know, than they
thought.
They drafted Justin Steele during that time. It just took almost a decade for it to shake out. So, like, this started really on Theo and Jed's watch towards the end of 2019, even before the Cubs got here for the Joe Madden-Theo farewell staged event. In a Busch Stadium, like, waiting room, wherever that was.
2019,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and then, but right before that, they had started just totally blowing up scouting, player development, re-emphasizing or starting new programs around, like, sports science. Mm-hmm. Dan Kantrovitz comes in shortly after that.
Part of the pitching development for the Cardinals, drafted Wacha, drafted Gonzalez, a guy who's helped.
Yeah. Craig Breslow, who's now running the Red Sox, he is elevated to director of pitching. And, like, the Cubs haven't figured everything out yet, and there were a lot of systems in place that were, like, really good going back to when the Cubs were trading away, like, Ryan Dempster for Kyle Hendricks, and, like, kind of trading Jeff Samardzija away, like, when he was an all-star. Like, there was a kind of an infrastructure of game planning that still, like, remains in place, and, like, Tommy Hotovy is a very well-regarded pitching coach. So, like, it's really hard to, like, you know, kind of isolate one thing or another, but I do think there's some stability here, but also I think you have to wonder, like, well, what's the ceiling, though? Like, is it to be the Arizona Diamondbacks? Like, is it to, you know, win one more game and sneak in as the last wild card? Is it, like, trying to win 88 games and win the Central? Like, And I don't know the answer to this. Like, what do you need to win a World Series? And they would tell you just to keep making the playoffs. But I do think it's an interesting time in this division of, are the Brewers for real and sustainable? Like, the Cardinals are clearly at this inflection point, and, you know, the Reds and Pirates have some talent. They haven't obviously figured it out yet, but, like, what do the Cubs want to be? I think that's, like, a big question that people in baseball have asking, like, you know, what are you going to do? What do you want to be? Who do you want to be? And I think hiring Craig Counsell was a major step in that direction of, like, we mean business.
That's great. I like the way you put that. So do they want to be Atlanta? Do they want to be the Dodgers? Or do they want to be the Cardinals of the early 2010s?
I mean, I think it's interesting to hear how they lauded the Arizona Diamondbacks of, like, hey, you know, just get in. And that, I mean, the Diamondbacks handled the Cubs last September. I think they won something like 5 or 6 games, and that really, I think the high water point of playoff probabilities, it was like above 90%. Mm-hmm. The Diamondbacks roll into Wrigley, and I think they won 3 or 4.
They probably flipped.
Or something. Yeah, like, by, they had two separate series. But, like, what do they want? Like, they want a team that's competitive, plays meaningful games in September, keeps Wrigley filled with 3 million fans every year, and is just relevant and in the conversation every year. And that's not, I'm not saying that as, like, a criticism, but, like, if you follow the team, that's made it clear. Like, they're like, the Dodgers are on another stratosphere. They have a TV deal. This is what they would tell you. They have a TV deal that's never going to be replicated. It's like one team and 29 other teams. And then
they're not wrong.
The Yankees are the Yankees. And so they're going to.
The Cubs could be the Phillies.
Well, I mean, the Phillies have, like,
an owner who likes to collect top free agents, who a front office that likes to collect top free agents and then moves on. So, I mean, they could be that, but it doesn't sound like they want to be.
It sounds like this is the model of kind of, like, they want to hover around the luxury tax and kind of see where things go. They want flexibility. Like, they
want to be the Cardinals and the Cubs want to be each other.
That's what that's not unreasonable, yeah. Like, comparison between the two, that the Cubs are not, have shown historically, like, they don't really step that far outside their comfort zone. And, like, Theo Epstein was someone who very much just kind of said, screw it, like, this is what we're going to do. And that, you know, changed the expectations and gave them, you know, certain blueprints to work with. There's still some institutional knowledge and memory, including Jed Hoyer at the top there. So it's going to be fascinating. I don't see the Cubs, like, bottoming out this year. I don't see any scenario where they're, like, selling. Mm-hmm. I think they have too much, like, pitching depth and, like, kind of organizational competence to just, like, have the season go off the rails. Like, but how healthy are they going to be? How big are they going to go at the trade deadline? Can players like Shota sustain their performance or a reasonable version of a successful season? And, like, can they get some of their players going who have pretty much the entire offense? Can they get them going to where every game, every pitch isn't, like, super high stress on the pitching staff? That's going to be another thing to watch here.
By the time Craig Counsell is there in Milwaukee managing for the Cubs against the Brewers for the first time, we'll be a third of the way through the season. What do you think of the division in the sense that are all five teams still able to win this thing? I mean, it's the only division where everybody was within – oh, there were two divisions where everybody was within, like, say, 8 games of each other. But it was the only division where every team was within, I think, 5 games of the wild card. That wasn't the case in the American League divisions. But, you know, I mean, there's so 5 games, 5.5 games, and the Reds, you know, kind of hit a skid. But within a playoff berth – do you think it's still up for grabs, or have any of these teams really, either if they catch fire, you think, oh, well, they'll run away with it? Is that even in play here, or could any of the five win?
I don't think any of the five can win. I think the Cubs are maybe the only team, and this doesn't, you don't fly flags for this or get parades for this, but they're, like, the only team that's not, like, feeling the hot seat meter just isn't really in play right here. And I think that helps. Like, if David Ross did come back this year, and, like, some of these... some of these one-run games flipped and they're under 500 a third through the season, like, teams feel that, and that is not the Cubs' vibe right now. I think there is a program in place. There's a long-term plan that they've mapped out. I'm just thinking of play, like, in Pittsburgh, it's hard to get it. Like, can you take that next step? You know, like, that's something there. The Reds.
A lot of talent, a lot of speed.
A lot of talent, but, like, it hasn't come together. And, like, is it going to? The Cardinals, you know, I don't.
Opposite of the Cubs, lots of pressure here.
A lot of pressure. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to me. I remember at the 2021 trade deadline, seeing John Lester in D.C., and I was like, hey, man, so you're going to the Cardinals? He's like, yeah, I guess. Like, he was kind of kind of blasé. And then the Cardinals win 17 games in a row.
Yeah.
And then, like,
he gets his 200th win.
He gets his 200th win, and they fire their manager. So, like, I've just been very – because at that moment when, like, as the – it felt very, very symbolic of the Cubs just, like, dealing away these 2016 players – and the Cardinals acquiring a player that the Cubs let go because their budget was slashed so dramatically during COVID. And then the Cardinals going on that winning streak. And then to fire the manager, I don't quite get it. I don't, you know, it'll be interesting to see, like, where the Cardinals go from here and, like, what shape this rivalry takes. But, you know, I don't think any team's going to blow us away. In the
what do you think is three teams that could win it? The teams that are 1, 2, 3 right now, even though the Cardinals started slow, sluggish, you think those are the real teams that have a chance to win the division?
I mean, real, like, what's it going to take to win this division? You know what I mean?
76.
Like, no, I'm kidding. Like, how many, yeah, just okay. like the bar here isn't super high, so, like, you know, the Diamondbacks
competitive.
The Diamondbacks won 84 and got to the World Series, so, like, I think there's a lot of, you know, almost all five of those teams, like, could be within that band if certain things go right. Like, I'm not a big Pirates guy, but, like, watching Paul Skeens throw a 6 no hit, like, they've got some pitching, they got some talent. Like, it's just a really, it's kind of, I think that gets to the frustration of Cubs fans of, like, look at this division and, like, why is the approach so measured and logical all the time to its extreme? Of, like, when it feels like, I mean, Milwaukee trades away Corbin Burnes, like, and they let their manager, this, like, franchise local icon, walk, and they couldn't keep David Stearns around, and, like, they're still leading the division. Like, that just drives Cubs fans crazy with a good reason.
It's where Cubs fans agree.
Like, yes.
Why are they so measured? Why are they so logical? Why can't they catch the Brewers?
Exactly. And then, so, I don't know. You'd know better than me. Like, what's going to happen to the Cardinals? Like, are the Cardinals going to recede, or do they have another run in them? I do think, going back to what I said earlier, like, the Cubs not going off the rails, I do think Council will be managing this club for the long haul, and that he won't be doing Joe Madden American Legion Week and lots of, you know, show up at 5 p.m. for the game. But he certainly is already taking measures to, like, make sure they're fresh for the stretch run.
All right. I will yield to your expertise on this next question because you're a City Connect veteran. The Cardinals are debuting their City Connect uniform. Are you a Wrigleyville fan of the City Connects? Have you warmed to them? Were you warmed to them? Have you warmed to them? What should I expect from the City Connect, experience now that it's arrived in St. Louis?
You know, I thought the Cubs jerseys don't and hat, like, look okay. The navy pants, though, don't work at all in my mind. Like, I don't like that monochrome myself. I saw the Cardinal City Connect. I really did not like the hats. They felt just so unoriginal because the Cardinals have, like, awesome logos and awesome uniforms and awesome hats. Like, they have so many, like, variations of, like, cool, creative, classic. And I get why they want to experiment with some of these things. Like, I'm saying this because you're asking me, but I just, like, when I saw the photos, I was just like, Really? It just says like STL and it's a red hat? Like, that's the best you got?
Yeah, a fleur-de-lis would have been cool. I mean, like, yeah, like pulling from
like
that.
Creative. Like, I thought there would just be more there and not like, because the jersey, the red jersey is like a quick glance. Like, it doesn't look like that much different.
No, it doesn't. Like, I mean, the pinstripe is new.
And then, but then, yeah, just, I actually saw someone wearing the STL hat last night at the stadium and I was like, I just don't get it, but like, these aren't designed for me. So, right. Whatever. Yeah. You know?
All right, you have a new podcast starting, Northside Territory. It's you're a co-host of it, and it's part of AJ Przinski's Foul Territory family, the universe that they're creating. Tell me more about like Northside Territory. It's a continuation of what you had been going.
Yeah, it's kind of.
Will you have City Connect jerseys?
Well, no, maybe we'll have like City Connect gear down the line. We'll see Northside Territory. Merchandise, but
it's like a Foul Territory as merch, so I figured you might.
Yeah, those decisions are well out of my purview for good reasons, but yeah, my colleague Sadiv and Sharma and I are, you know, trying to do stuff similar to what you do, Derek, and what they do on Foul Territory, and I think that's trying to talk to fans in like a real way, and like we all have different kind of ways of expressing things or ways of trying to find stuff out, but like I think we're all trying to go to the same place, and that's to like level with our readers and our listeners and our audience, and to like take them behind the scenes and let them know what ownership is thinking, what front office is thinking, what the manager is thinking, what the clubhouse is thinking, and that you do that all the time in your work, in print and in the podcast space. And so this will be an extension of our work on The Athletic, three shows a week. And
wow, three a week.
So, yeah, wow. Kind of shorter, like, bursts of, like, trying to be in the moment. And they take care of everything on the back end, which helps a lot. They've been really great to us.
That's cool.
The Foul Territory Network. And then, yeah, I mean, there could be a Northside Territory jinx because we start it right when this, like, offensive spiral sort of was beginning. And so we've had a lot. It's been more anticipating fans' airing of grievances that, yeah. Like, I'm sure people are like, why aren't you doing this in April when the team was rolling? But that's just kind of how the deal came together now.
And is there a video component as well? Like, do you guys...
I think there will be potentially later.
Okay.
Not quite cool. This moment. So you'll have to come on and...
Yeah, I will.
Next time we get a Cubs Cardinals.
That'll be something
going.
Yeah, that'll be something. It'll be good. It's cool. And I mean, where can people can find it? Wherever they get podcasts, right? iTunes, all that stuff.
Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Yeah,
that's great. And that three times a week, man, that's a lot. That's going to be impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know how it is. Like this, the teams like the Cubs and Cardinals are easy to talk about because people care about them. You know, like I think if you're doing about covering a different team, like it could be a real grind, but like, you know, we kind of cover the circus, and there's always something going on, and we're fortunate enough, both of us, to work in passionate markets.
Absolutely.
For people like these are local institutions that people really care about, and like you and I never take that for granted.
That is Patrick Mooney, senior writer at The Athletic, covering the Cubs. His podcast is Northside Territory. It's part of the Foul Territory universe. Are you going to call it that, right?
Kind of yeah, like, you know, if you want.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's what it is. I also want to thank you for being here today for the debut of my new co-host of the best podcast in baseball. It's the Cicadas, because we're outside. I think it's going to be a summer-long soundtrack here for the best podcast in baseball. You can find the best podcast in baseball same place as you can find Northside Territory, Apple, iTunes, that's the same thing.
Spotify,
and of course, STLtoday.com, where you can find all the constant Cardinals coverage, including the work of my colleagues Lynn Worthy and Daniel Guerrero. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. For Patrick Mooney, senior writer at The Athletic, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. We got clubhouses to go to interview athletes. So thank you very much, Patrick. Thanks for joining me.
You got it.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.